Cats in Hell, a look back at Saturday Night Live with your hosts, Matt and Keith. Brought to you by Lion's Den Audio Theater. Like and subscribe to Lion's Den Audio Theater for more Lion's Den goodness. And here are your hosts, Keith and Matt.
Saturday Night Live, Season 4, Episode 6, starring Carrie Fisher. Originally aired on November 18th, 1978. Hello, welcome to SNL. My name is Keith. With me as always, my good buddy Matt.
Hey, Keith, what's up, man?
Not much. And joining us tonight, one of our more prolific third chairs, tremendous fellow, it's Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Keith. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Yeah, no worries. Carrie Fisher is tonight's host. We're all of the age of Star Wars. Carrie Fisher, the daughter of celebrities Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds, stepdaughter of Elizabeth Taylor. You might remember Elizabeth Taylor was on the show last week as played by John Belushi, eating a big piece of chicken. Fisher appeared in the 1974 movie Shampoo before she became a white hot celebrity in 1977 for playing Princess Leia in Star Wars. That was over a year and a half before this episode of Saturday Night Live aired, but Fisher was still a white hot property. Her last work of note before this appearance was a TV movie written for and starring Ringo Starr, and that aired in April of 78, and there was a TV movie as well with John Ritter. This episode of Star Wars aired one day after the Star Wars Holiday Special aired. Coincidentally, it was also the same night that Jim Jones and the People's Temple took their lives down in Guyana, November 18th, 1978. Kevin, Matt, let's talk about Carrie Fisher for a few here. You guys big fans of Carrie Fisher?
I don't really know a lot of Carrie Fisher, to be honest, outside of the Star Wars stuff. She was in The Family Guy. She played Peter's boss. She had a funny spot on 30 Rock. And the career got a little shaky there for a little bit, didn't it?
She was quite open about struggles with mental illness and drug addiction and whatnot. And also, too, she did a lot of writing as well, kind of got away from the acting side of things.
But she had a pretty good one-woman show for a while, too. I only caught bits and pieces of it. I'd always wanted to see it live. She's a pretty funny lady.
Mm-hmm. I love her in The Burbs with Tom Hanks. Do you remember that movie, gentlemen?
I do. Yeah. A little bit.
Oh, The Burbs is fun. That's a fun movie. Well, she had a nice range. It's a shame she didn't really do a lot more stuff. But at the same time, what she did do, she excelled at.
Didn't she play a nun in Jay and Silent Bob as well?
She sure did.
And I love that 30 Rock appearance. I think she very much encapsulated the writer of a certain time, you know.
Oh yeah, she went insane. It was really funny.
Yeah, it was Liz's future was kind of what we were seeing there, wasn't it?
Yeah. Ghost of Christmas Future.
Yeah. Musical guests tonight are the Blues Brothers. We last saw them we see them every week, but we last saw Jake and Elwood in their bluesy form and Steve Martin season 3 episode. 10 days after this appearance on November 28th, they were to release their album Briefcase Full of Blues, which becomes a huge hit. Since their last appearance, though, they've ramped up a lot with the band and really been focusing on it a bit more than the comedy. And had some opening acts over the summer, like they had one for Steve Martin in Los Angeles. So the Blues Brothers, Matt, you and I have talked about them a lot. And Kevin, where do you sit on the Blues Brothers, or do you?
I'm neither here nor there. Like, I like the movie. I think that their music is quite well, but the weird pseudo sequel they had years later kind of turned me off from it, to be honest. Just based on the movie alone, I do love the Blues Brothers, and I just like watching Dan Aykroyd and Belushi. I just like watching the two of them kind of work off each other because they did fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoy them a great amount. Matt, you weren't a fan, but then are their last appearance, you sort of softened a bit. I'm interested to see as we go through where you're going to wind up after this one.
Sure. I mean, I'm not looking forward to it. I feel like I know what I'm going to get. It's just not for me.
So let's jump right to the cold open. We have Garrett Morris at the microphone as some real boppy blues plays in the background. Garrett looks fantastic. He's dapper. He's got a smoke going. And I think he says his name is Joe Marquis. He's introducing the Blues Brothers. Really builds into a high energy entrance for Jake and Elwood. Jake, which is Belushi, hits a cartwheel right away. And they go into Soul Man, where Dan is doing a really cool dance as well. Very high energy. They have a great backing band behind them. Both Dan and John are totally into this. John more than he's been into any sketch this year. Great way to open the show. Garrett was great. Oddly enough, he comes out after the song finishes. Garrett comes out sort of half dressed to do the live from New York. Made me think he might have forgotten he was supposed to do that and started changing for his next sketch. All of the sort of unpolishedness that was gone. They are a refined act now, and it is really good.
I thought it was pretty high energy. Like it brought a lot. You tell that they're having a great time being the Blues Brothers. Like they're just enjoying every moment of being on stage and playing music. And it just it kind of just hits you right from the get-go that this is going to be hopefully an exciting show. I think it was a great opening.
First of all, this better count as one of their musical performances tonight. I count it, marking it off. I don't love having music at the top of the show as the cold open, but you guys said it. There's no denying the energy that they all brought. It did its job effectively in getting me pumped for the show, regardless of my feelings about the music.
Yeah, and your issue is you just don't like this kind of music, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And we get into the intro. Kevin, is this your first season 4 episode? It is. Kevin, what do you think of the new intro since you've been with us last? The pictures, the very New York intro, I was calling it.
It's okay. The static images are, you know, like it looks nice. Like obviously this is, you know, in the 70s. But at the same time, I don't know, I like the openings where they kind of like pan around and you get more of a view of New York and you kind of get to see the various performers kind of like in their element to a degree. Like I always enjoyed that myself, but it's not bad. It's better than the past few openings that we've had for the past few seasons. But that's I don't think that's a high bar to go above, to be honest.
Well, you were with us for that season 3 opening, weren't you, where their faces were floating in space or whatever it was, that really weird one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, not a high bar to go above. Like obviously they're going to get better in time, but you know, it's not great, but it's not bad.
Yeah, I also noticed during the intro we're going to see some Father Guido Sarducci tonight, which is always a welcome thing for me. We are now off to the monologue. Carrie Fisher enters in her Princess Leia costume. She says she was conflicted about whether or not to come out in costume, but worried people wouldn't recognize her if she just came out as herself. So she asked her good buddy Obi-Wan Kenobi, who suggested the costume's fine, but she has to come out and give a good joke. So Carrie starts telling a joke about a bantha getting stranded at Jabba's palace, and this is basically a variation of the old farmer willing to let the guy stay in the house as long as he doesn't touch his daughter. Carrie starts to think maybe the joke is a little too inside Star Wars, but then Obi-Wan's voice comes over and there's a strange flickering blue light. And Obi-Wan tells her to trust her instincts and tell the joke. She argues that the audience might be too sophisticated for such a joke, but Obi-Wan insists that she tells the joke. As she continues on and talks about Wookiees, Obi-Wan starts giggling. Obi-Wan says it's the best joke in the universe. Carrie suggests that maybe some people are getting a little too fed up with Star Wars. She then begins to finish the joke, says she's happy that she appeared in the movie and is glad she didn't appear in a sci-fi movie in the 50s. We get a really weird, it's a flub, a really weird cut to a stand-in standing in front of a green screen, which really kills the lead here. So Carrie kind of finishes the joke and then she just throws to the next sketch. I thought Carrie was fantastic. She was obviously loving being there. Kudos for getting in the Star Wars clothes. Again, Star Wars is huge. You've got to address it. And they do address it here. And in the next sketch, they get it out of the way. And now they can move on with the show. Dan Aykroyd's Obi-Wan was hilarious with him giggling as she's trying to tell the joke. That glitch really killed the audience because everybody, it was one of the weirdest things ever. Apart from the glitch and what was in Carrie's hands, I thought she was excellent in this monologue.
You know, she's fine. She seems comfortable, but I did not enjoy this at all. This was one of my least favorite monologues in a while, in fact. I thought the jokes were really aggravating. I didn't get, I guess, what was going on with Obi-Wan Kenobi or if he was supposed to be anything like him because he was most assuredly not. And the light thing was weird, like, I think The Exorcist 2 had just come out. It looked something like kind of weirdly like that. anyway, I thought it was a huge mess and I didn't find it funny at all. And her hair was like way off. Those rolls on the side looked terrible. yeah, just a train wreck.
it's very pandery to the Star Wars fans, because obviously that's the demographic they're trying to get to watch this episode as well. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get the Star Wars fans in, and then back to business as usual. She seemed very comfortable what she was doing. Dan Aykroyd did a great job as Obi-Wan. But from a lore standpoint, Star Wars-wise, my brain was screaming at me, but I shut that part off because it has nothing to do with this. But it went on a little bit too long. Like, I feel like they could have done some sort of, like, maybe a different joke that kind of worked with the audience, because the audience didn't seem too enthused about it until Dan Aykroyd started laughing. It kind of disarmed them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flub happened, and then they were like, please go to the next sketch, like, finish this off, like, put Carrie out of her misery, because she's just, like, the look on her face is, I clearly want to do something else. Please let me stop doing Star Wars. Like, if you think we're sick of Star Wars now, she was definitely sick of it then, especially after doing the holiday special. And the less said about that, the better.
Yeah, and she didn't recall doing that, is what her story was.
If you've watched that special, you'll see why she doesn't remember it very well. She's like staring off into the middle distance, being like, I can't wait to have the ham sandwich I'm staring at. If it does in fact exist.
We now go to Beach Blanket Bimbo from Outer Space. And this is a parody of those 1950s beach movies with Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello. There was a Chiron screw up right at the beginning of this as well. So there's something going on technically. But my first reaction after Chiron screw up was, holy shit, what a set. Full beach set with sand and everything. It was quite impressive. But sitting on the beach, Tom Davis, Al Franken, Lorraine and Jane are playing teenagers, and they're talking about how great things are for them to be young and popular and innocent post-adolescence, and how they're so innocent that they haven't heard of drugs, haven't touched drugs, and they haven't even heard about acid, and it's going to be 7 years until they do. Bill and Gilda, of course, play Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello. Frankie asks Annette to let him go all the way, but Annette says no. Frankie says please and grabs her chest. Carrie then warps in, and this is why there was a green screen issue in the beginning, and she's playing Princess Leia, an exchange student from outer space. Lorraine introduces everyone and says they're a popular crowd. Jane says they're a bunch of rich WASP kids and Italian teenagers living off their parents until it's hip to reject them. Gilda introduces herself and Frankie and her breasts, then tells Carrie it's the 1950s and nice girls don't go all the way. Carrie takes off her Princess Leia robe and exposes a gold two-piece bathing suit. Franken and Davis are so blown away they pass out, and I think Frankie says, talk about heavenly bodies. Frankie is immediately interested in Princess Leia. Dan then enters as Vincent Price, carrying marinated lamb that he's about to deliver to a friend who's a popular recording artist. Bill then demonstrates a kiss poorly to Princess Leia. Annette then interferes as she sees them kissing, and they immediately go into a song. The song is about it's Princess Leia singing it. It's about trying to be liked by everyone, by both having friends that are girls and dating boys, and just being the new kid on Earth. The background music during the refrain is people singing Obi-Wan Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Belushi then enters as biker kid Eric Von Zipper, who has heard there's a new broad on the beach who has more curves than the Ventura Freeway. And then Vincent Price re-enters with Chubby Checker, played by Garrett, and asks if they like to have fun. The kids all say yes, they like to have fun, and Chubby is delighted because there's nothing he likes more than entertaining white kids on a beach. They immediately go into a version of The Twist that also has Obi-Wan Kenobi as the refrain. I thought this was an excellent piece. The tech, of course, made it weird at the beginning. It's a very, very fun sketch. Everyone was all in, and almost everybody on the show, like who works on the show, was there. Definitely an excellent parody of this kind of film, from the corny dialogue to the random music number to just a random celebrity showing up on the beach ready to sing for a bunch of rich white kids. Triple thumbs up for Alan Zweibel's random surfs up as he runs across the stage with a surfboard. Only issue with this sketch for me is the tech stuff, including the fact that the audio wasn't so great. It was hard to make out the lyrics to some of the music. But I really enjoyed this a lot, actually.
No, not, it wasn't for me, Keith. I feel the opposite. I really disliked it a great deal, and I found it super excruciating. Dan's Vincent Price is terrible. And maybe it's because I'm not, I have no nostalgia for any of this 50s business. And I'm not super familiar with it, other than, the tropes and the stereotypes, which are well on display here. And the idea, I guess, of Princess Leia showing up in a 50s bikini in one of these old timey movies probably looks maybe good on paper, but I didn't think any chubby checker Vincent Price added nothing. This Obi-Wan Kenobi rhythm vocals were driving me up the wall. I hated this from start to finish.
I'm of two minds. I think it's a great premise for a sketch, kind of. I think having everybody there kind of bring her into the fold for the rest of the show was also quite, it was fun to see everybody kind of playing around and working off each other. But it was long. It was very long. I thought it was way too long than it needed to be. Vincent Price just showing up and Chubby Checkers just showing up. That's part of the course for some of these, 50s beach movies, which I, for some odd reason, know some of. Yeah, it was weird. It was just weird. The weird, creepy pervert vibes from Dan Aykroyd felt more like John Waters than it did Vincent Price. And just... I think they just wanted to try and find a way to insert Princess Leia into a sketch and just get it out of the way. I think maybe the technical aspect maybe got everybody a little bit shaky, because I don't know if it was an audio thing or maybe it was just they were concerned about what happened at the beginning of the sketch where the tech flubbed a little bit, but it just seemed very rocky from the get-go. But there was some laughs here and there, but it could have been done better.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It spoke to me. I loved it. And Matt, you have gone on record before as saying you hate Dan Aykroyd's Vincent Price impression.
It's just so bad. He plays him as too much of a mincing perv and not this villainous character that he is. It's just an unusually bad impression.
Are either of you familiar with Michael McKean or Bill Hader's Vincent Price's?
Not McKean's.
I'm familiar with both. I really like Bill Hader's just really good with impressions, though, so it's hard to... putting someone against like in an unfair fight in situations like that.
Yeah, both are better than Aykroyd's, though Aykroyd's doesn't anger me. We are now off to what's quite possibly the complete opposite style of sketch. It's the Loud family. Jane, Bill, Carrie, and Gilda play a family of people who are just extremely loud. The phone rings and Jane answers it. It's a boy named Kevin who has a crush on Joan, played by Carrie, who is going to come over to visit. Bill says he's glad that the boy is going to come over. The girl suggests that the parents tend to scare their boyfriends away. Dan Aykroyd then enters as Gene's date, Red, and Gene is played by Gilda. He is uncomfortable immediately with all the yelling. Seems to be a very soft-spoken gentleman. Bill mentions that they once had a third daughter who died in a skiing accident because of an avalanche. Kevin, played by Belushi, enters. Now, he works at an airport as an airport ground crew. And he still has his work uniform on, the full body suit and the earmuffs. Bill and Jane then say they're going to leave the children alone and pound their way upstairs. And we begin hearing them having sex very loudly. Dan then pulls out a joint and hands it around. And the girls start yelling about how great the pot is. Bill and Jane then come back downstairs and send the girls into the kitchen because they want to speak to them privately. Dan asks John why the family talks so loud, but John can't hear him because he has the earmuffs on. Family fights very loudly in the kitchen until the doorbell rings, and it's Garrett entering as a police officer. He comes in and tells everyone to quiet down because he heard them yelling as he was driving by. This was a ridiculously simple idea, pulled off excellently. When Bill and Jane went upstairs and started having sex, I burst out laughing because I didn't see it coming or going that way. Garrett coming in as the cop saying he was driving by and heard them from the street also got some big laughs from me. After this last huge production heavy, a lot of thought went into its sketch. To have something this simple is a great contrast. This got me as well. I really, really love this sketch, even though on paper this would be the first thing I would vote against if I was in a writer's room. Really well done.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like it on paper either, as I think about it. I mean, I don't like loud people. I struggle with loud people. People that, will sit beside me at a bar and scream in my ear. Oh, buddy, I can't handle it. So anyway, much to my surprise, I also really enjoyed it. I thought Gilda's shouting was especially loud and funny. And the crowd really seemed to enjoy her. yeah, a fun, ridiculous concept that everybody was so into that when Dan comes in and he speaks at his regular voice, it was hilarious when he just wasn't doing anything. And her dying in an avalanche, also really very funny.
Yeah, the avalanche line killed me, I have to say. It was very good. So good. I loved small, stupid, simple premise sketches. Initially, I did have an issue with the ending because it just kind of seemed like it just was like, here's the line, and then but after a kind of a rewatch of it, I changed my mind on that. I really enjoyed the sketch. I think it was solid beginning to end. Fantastic.
It's amazing when these overly simple ones work, eh?
The best comedy is stuff you can kind of turn your brain off quickly and just like enjoy the premise and not, you know, not get too bogged down into it.
Our next sketch is Mercy Killers, and I think this was a Franken and Davis. Gilda and Belushi play two people they're a married couple. Gilda's mother, which is Belushi's mother-in-law, is now in a coma. The doctor, played by Jane Curtin, tells them that the old woman is suffering from a bunch of fake but convincing-sounding medical conditions, and she's in a complete vegetative state, except she can feel excruciating pain. Belushi reasons that keeping someone in pain at the cost of $2,000 a day is unreasonable, and he asks if there's any way they can put her out of her misery. The doctor says the decision is up to Gilda. Belushi says, honey, let's face it, she's a veg. Gilda still can't do it. So we cut to Dan and Bill in a different room. They're breaking into a filing cabinet, and they read this old lady's file, and Bill says, it sounds like a job for us. We then get a title card for Mercy Killings, because it turns out Dan and Bill are two mercy killers masquerading as hospital orderlies. Dr. Jane catches them in their office and is suspicious because there's been a lot of strange deaths happening in the hospital. She asks if they heard anything about the mysterious death in post-op. They didn't. Cut to Lorraine and Carrie as two nurses back in the hospital room, and they're walking Garrett into a hospital bed. So it turns out Garrett is in the same hospital room as the old woman. The nurses sedate Garrett. Bill and Dan come in, and seeing a mildly sedated Garrett, assume he's the one that has to be put away. Bill notes that the file says that Garrett should be a 78-year-old female Caucasian, but Dan chalks it up to another issues with the hospital's terrible filing system. Dan and Bill then smother Garrett with a pillow. Dan says that the people they can help can never thank them, but maybe someday someone will write a song about them. Bill sings a song about the Mercy Killers over the closing credits. I thought this was a very funny sketch. It's definitely kind of pertinent these days with medical assisted death being a big news item. I found it strange that Jane had the lead female part and not Carrie, but Jane certainly pulled it off. Dan and Bill's sneakiness in when they were caught in the office was just great. I thought this was pretty clever.
I felt pretty middle of the road about it personally. I really liked some of it. I thought Jane and Gilda and Belushi, that little part was great. And Belushi really made me laugh. And Jane is really good as like the back giving the bad news doctor. The premise itself is fantastic. Like these two idiot custodians in a hospital thinking they're mercy killers and doing their best. Like seems like very fertile ground, but I just don't really like what they did with it. I thought it was just a little too unbelievably stupid when they were going at Garrett and they just didn't see that it was the wrong person. I don't know. I couldn't go that far with them, I guess, and it kind of took me out of it.
I like the opening of the sketch because Belushi's just kind of, you know, let or die type mentality. It was just the way he delivered it. I couldn't stop laughing at it. Just like to the point and dark. Like, I want to leave the hospital. I don't want to pay this money, you know, whatever. I didn't know what I was going to expect from this sketch. And then once they had the thing that said Mercy Killers, like as soon as you got to that title card, I was all in on it. I thought it was really well done. The part that killed me the most was their theme song during the credits at the end that Bill was singing, like Chef's Kiss. I love that. Like, if this was the only three sketches we watched tonight, this would probably easily be my favorite of the night. Yeah. I don't know what that says about me as a person, but like, it's so good.
Oh, hey, it was a good sketch, right? We now go to Weekend Update, and it's led in by a picture of Gerald Ford with Mickey Mouse, and it's another Betty Ford facelift joke. Ancient bones were found in Cairo, believing to be those of John the Baptist, but it was actually a dinosaur. Jane says John the Baptist was believed to be a swamp-dwelling herbivore who was over 70 feet long. Reports that McDonald's is putting worms in their burgers. They deny this, but McDonald's can't explain why burgers crawl away after you cut them. After calls of racism, Sambo's restaurant says they're going to change their name to Bob's Jew Boy. Then there's a bit about the Vatican Bank helping Italians avoid paying tax. So the gossip columnist from the Vatican newspaper, Father Guido Sarducci, comes in. Sarducci says it's all sour grapes from the government and the press. He says if the Vatican can get money coming in rather than going out, everyone will just leave them alone. The Vatican will now act as an exchanger for money, so you can send American dollars to the Vatican and they'll switch it into whatever European currency you want. And you'll get prizes or presents, I suppose, gifts for giving money to the Vatican Bank. $1,000 will get you a pair of gloves. $2,000 will get you a Zodiac wall clock. If you send a letter before January 1st, for $2.50, you can get a guide to the confessional. It's a book to teach people how to weasel around and maneuver themselves in the confession booth. And he makes a reference to basically this book being the sin equivalent of a good accountant. Rosanna Dana comes in and turns a bit about quitting smoking into seeing people naked in the change room of her gyms and using the sauna. She was once sitting next to Dr. Joyce Brothers, who had a ball of sweat hanging off the tip of her nose that just wouldn't fall off. Jane asks what this whole thing has to do with cigarettes. Roseanne, of course, says if it's not one thing, it's another. Smoking or sweat balls, something's going to happen to you. Roseanne then sings a song she says is one she knew when she was a kid about grace before dinner, but it actually turns out to be a reference to Dr. Joyce Brothers. Thought this was a pretty strong update. It's been a while since we last saw Roseanne, which was good. She was starting to get on my nerves a little bit. I'm always down for Father Guido. It was short on strong jokes, but there were a couple in there I really enjoyed. Oh, and the McDonald's groundworms. I mean, I was told that when I was a kid, and I believed that till I was about 20. So they obviously didn't do that great of a job dispelling that rumor. What are you thinking, guys?
I'm having a rough time this episode. Personally, I guess I'm okay. I didn't, the only, like, I'm picking out things like, oh, cool, an old styrofoam container that they're using from McDonald's. The fried lice joke was especially gross, so I kind of liked it because it was gross. I really was disappointed with the Sarducci bit this time. When I saw Roseanne come out, I thought, okay, give me some energy. This episode needs it. I need it in this episode. And there was a silliness about her that I liked tonight. The wig was really catching my eye tonight. And when she talked about somebody's belly button being like a little knob on like a door, it was one of my favorite laughs of the evening. Of course, I always like Jane's visible disgust. So it ended on a high note, but I thought it was a pretty terrible weekend update overall.
I'm trying to understand why Bill is there for this particular weekend, because there was a lot going on. Easily could have just passed his stuff off to Jane. I'm not sure if they don't believe that she can pull it off by herself. I'm not sure. And I like Bill Murray. I like him a lot. I don't know. I just didn't understand why he was there particularly, maybe to work off Father Sarducci, but which I enjoyed him. Rosanna, however you go about that word vomit of a name, highlight of that whole bit. Just her energy, her little rant. I had me in stitches. I'm choking on my own rage here. No. Just trying to understand why Bill was there. It just didn't seem like he needed to be there. It bothered me. I'm not sure why it bothered me, but it bothered me.
Yeah, for some reason they decided Jane can't do it alone, and I think it was a mistake.
He looked visibly not cool with the fried lice joke, which was a funny joke, a little funny joke, but he just looked uncomfortable telling it, whereas I'm sure Jane would have no problem telling the joke, just going straight forward. Like, he seemed a bit weak in comparison to everybody else that was there, so it took a bit of that away from it.
Yeah, I find him an upgrade from Aykroyd, but Jane could be doing this by herself, I think. We are now off to the second set from the Blues Brothers. They do I Got Everything I Need, Almost, and B-Movie Boxcar Blues. Again, very high energy, very spirited performance from both. That band is absolutely awesome. This was another really enjoyable segment for me. Not much to say beyond, like, the polish this act was lacking the last time is there, and I really enjoyed this.
Yes, it's kind of the same deal for me, in that I am just not the market for it. It is just not for me. But I mean, you know, I watch it. I'm not out here skipping it. Can't knock the energy they bring, but I you know, I'm not just going to sit here and shit on it. That's not reasonable. I just don't like it.
In comparison to a lot of the other musical acts that I've seen doing the show with you guys, very high energy, very competent, something I legitimately enjoy as well, because that was an issue with a lot of the older musical acts, is they might have someone I enjoy, but it was mostly just music for music's sake, I feel. This worked really well, and I think kind of meshed with the show as well for people that maybe are kind of phasing out a little bit. I find the show had decent energy throughout, so I think this adds a bit more to that. Absolutely fantastic. They look like they're having a great time. The band's having a great time. The audience is having a great time. That's the most important part.
We're now off to Mr. Bill. He's going sailing in a country lake. Mr. Hands gives him a hat and puts a fisherman's hook in it. The hook impales Mr. Bill's head. Mr. Hands then makes Spot and puts him on a hook and uses him as bait to go fishing. They fish up Mr. Sluggo, who harpoons Mr. Bill, and he's then sort of reeled away for Mr. Bill. I did find this one kind of funny. I found this one was especially painful. Poor little guy. But, you know, not a Mr. Bill fan, but didn't mind this one too much.
I needed this as a bit of a palate cleanser. You know, I do like Mr. Bill generally, and I just needed him to have a minute. Like, oh, good, Mr. Bill, he's outside the city. Maybe, oh, Mr. Hand, be careful, please. And it just, oh, my God, it just was so bad so quickly. Fuck Sluggo, too, by the way. This was an absolute tragedy. Not my favorite, Mr. Bill. Just too much torture too fast. I feel like he didn't even get that brief moment in the sun. Made my heart hurt.
I always love Mr. Bill. I'm never going to have a bad thing to say about a Mr. Bill bit. Pretty dark right from the get-go, though. Like, yeah, he didn't have a lot of time to just, you know, enjoy being on the water, going fishing. It was just straight into pain and misery. But otherwise, yeah, it was pretty good. It's fun. Enjoyed it. Maybe I just enjoy pain. I don't know.
We now go to Tomorrow, and again, we have Dan as Tom Snyder. Snyder talks about Thanksgiving and talking about how he went and bought an electric steak knife rather than sharpening his old ones. He's interviewing Carrie Fisher, who's playing Linda Blair. Though she's only 19, she's been around the block, been through the mill. Did a picture called The Exorcist, using language that is, to say the least, a bit raw. Having played Satan, Snyder wonders, how did she keep up with her schoolwork? Linda says she hasn't. She can't read English and knows only three states. It's mentioned that Tom can't laugh without scaring children. Tom says he scared the bejesus out of his stage manager's child. Linda mentions that he also scares adults, too. Tom goes through a whole thing about cocaine because Linda was recently caught with it, and he wants to know what that was all about. She says it was bad cocaine. It had been cut with powdered milk. He says that if it were him, he would have gone back to the dealer or the fence and demanded a refund. He wonders what's next for Linda Blair. She thinks she has a lot to look forward to. She's only 19. She has some bad marriages, some household accidents, and maybe a few nervous breakdowns in her future. Blair then, in the devil's voice, offers Tom some blow. Excellent sketch. Can never get enough of Dan's Tom Snyder. Thought his wordplay. He went through a whole list of synonyms for coke here. It was really, really funny. Carrie Fisher, I think, was really good. I don't know Linda Blair to be this much of a bubblehead. I did feel a little bad for Linda Blair in this sketch. She's only 19, and they're really running her over the coals on live TV.
I absolutely agree that it was great. But much like you, I'm like, fucking back off Linda Blair a little. Especially, don't you tell me that of all people, like, one of the original not ready for primetime players, and Carrie effing Fisher going to sit there and crack jokes about somebody with getting caught for drugs. Get out of here. No business doing it. Did not like that. Kind of disappointed. But Tom's great. The fact that his laugh terrifies children really made me laugh. And telling, like, he said, yeah, just tell your cocaine dealer, you'll take your business elsewhere. He was really funny. Always does the character so well. Carrie's Reagan voice was terrible at the end too, and her Linda Blair was just nothing. She wasn't trying to do anything, being a ditz. So I didn't get that part, so it was fine.
I found the two of them played off each other very well. That was really fun to see. The joke about cutting it with powdered milk, I found it super funny. Really well put together. Laughed a lot. I'll be honest, I'm still gonna say I laughed a lot at the cocaine jokes, but again, I'm a horrible person.
My biggest laugh of the episode was probably when he said dealer, pusher, or fence. When he said fence, I was done.
Again, like, probably another the highlight sketch for me, to be honest, altogether. Yeah. All things considered,
we're now off to the World Bar, aka Marseille. It's a bar filled with sailors and loose women, and it's set in Marseille, 1978. It starts with Belushi as Eddie and old Sea Dog telling a story to Jane and Gilda, their two French barflies. The girls get some drinks from him and then ask for money for the jukebox. They move off as he continues talking. Bill then enters as a dapper naval officer. Lorraine tries to get a drink from him, and he asks her why. She says she's thirsty and she likes him, so Bill orders her a water, much to her disgust. Dan, as the bartender, says that the women there only drink champagne. Bill gets his beer and goes and sits at a table. Carrie then comes over as another one of the ladies of the bar. Bill says he knows her game. She will only get drinks from him until his money runs out. Dan tries to move her along, but she says she likes Bill and she's going to stick around and buy her own drinks. Bill says the last time he was in a bar, he spent $80 and didn't even get drunk. She says he should save his money. She then starts talking about mutual funds and pulls out a mutual fund form from her boot. If Bill signs up, the contract gets sent to their Swiss bank, where it will be invested for him, and the money will come right out of Bill's paycheck. Carrie then starts to pleasure Bill as he considers signing the contract, which he does, as she seductively explains the way that mutual funds work. Garrett comes over asking about the funds. He says he noticed in the small print that Carrie's character is going to get to keep the money he invests for the first year. It turns out Dan is actually a broker, and rather than sort of running these women as a pimp, he's more or less a mutual fund manager. He congratulates Carrie for breaking a new record, selling 18 glasses of champagne and 2 mutual funds. I thought this was extremely clever, very well performed, a very good sketch. There was something missing that didn't put it over the top for me. But I mean, I recently had to go through this whole mutual fund stuff myself, and it wasn't quite like this.
I wish my mutual fund meeting went like this. It would have been a lot more interesting as they asked me 1,000 questions about everything from the past like 4 years. Yeah, I enjoyed
it. Did you guys not get hand jobs when you went to talk about your mutual funds?
No.
I don't know if I would have liked the hand job. There's too many calluses on the guy's hands. But
I got a card.
But no, it was a fun sketch. One of those smart joke type sketches. So I'm going to pretend that I got all those jokes and say it was super funny. But I didn't really catch it in the beginning, but when she pulled out the funds out of her boot and started talking about mutual funds, I was right back into the sketch. So, yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was pretty clever, too. Yeah, funny. I couldn't believe I thought that hand job joke was pretty racy. But Bill was so good in it. I thought everybody did a great job, and it didn't overstay its welcome, which I was worried about, and which you easily could have done, because they were right at the line. They stopped short.
So did she, and then Bill put her hand back down.
Hey-oh!
We're now off to Bad Chinese Ballet by Tom Schiller, and we have the intro, of course, from Leonard Pinth-Garnell. He talks about this Chinese ballet being first done at the Lady Bird Johnson Memorial Fund, financed by a Texas millionaire who later married the author of the ballet, who is also a keychain manufacturer on the side. And this ballet was all about preparing women in Red China for an invasion by U.S. forces. So a bunch of women come out with signs and guns and the version of the sort of Red China citizens uniform. Dan had previously mentioned a subtle reference to an American invasion. Turns out to be Garrett playing Mickey Rivers sliding into third base wearing his New York Yankee uniform. He is then beaten severely by the women. Dan then announces the cast members. The women are played by members of the Austin Chamber of Commerce, Garrett, of course, playing Mickey Rivers, and the flag bearer was a returning Ronnie Bateman, played by Bill. These are usually lots of fun. I think this was fun in a lot of ways. It's definitely not the best of the bad series. I got a kick out of Garrett and how he was, you know, the not so subtle reference to U.S. imperialism. This was very short, so it didn't bother me as much as it could have had it gone on as long as like the Lewin Hook one had done. Great series, ho-hum sketch.
Yeah, I think you're right. Usually like these a little more. I never like them as much as you do. And other than I did laugh at the Mao flag for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe I just think Mao's funny. Not that what he did's funny. That's not what I mean. Mao comedy? Is there such a thing? I don't know. Anyway, cheerfully withdrawn. You're right. It didn't overstay its welcome. It was in, it was out. And I did appreciate that. It was just a little silly slice of late show fun.
Yep.
It was short. Loved it. That's it. That's my note on it. Done.
Yep.
We're good. It was fun. It was short. It didn't overstay its welcome, good or bad. It was short enough that I enjoyed it. Got my chuckle. Move on to the next bit.
And the next bit is also from Tom Schiller. It's one of Schiller's reels. And this is the fourth or fifth one we've seen. I think it's the fourth one we've seen. An older woman narrates a home movie of her trip to Rome with her husband called Roman. Roman had been recovering from a coronary bypass, and there's a lot of clips of the couple traveling around. She talks about all the places they went, having a great time. He's obviously getting tired from the trip, though, as we see him like carrying her bags around, and his feet are sore at one point. We see all of a sudden a young Italian man named Tony, who has befriended the couple, especially her. Then Roman dies at the dinner table. She and Tony continue on the trip, and they get married because of her husband's medical insurance covered the honeymoon. This was really short. Great piece. Thought this was really, really funny. I really enjoyed this. The poor old guy just keeling over. And I always wonder about that when somebody gets sick and they say, well, take a vacation. It'd be nice and relaxing. Most vacations are not relaxing at all.
I don't know why you take a relaxing vacation in Rome. I've been to Rome. It's a lot of walking. It's a lot of steps. It's a lot of heat. It's very warm. So I could see why he died during his trip. 100%. I can relate to that. I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed this. Like, again, probably one of the highlights of the show for me. I just, it's very normal kind of thing. And then he dies. It gets a bit absurdist, and then it has a nice little happy ending to it. And it's funny all around. It's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Happy ending for her.
Well, if you think about it, isn't death the ultimate happy ending?
Maybe so.
I'm going to die after this episode. This episode has taken joy from me. I have really found it a slog. I did not think this was funny. I didn't find the old couple funny, him dying funny, the grainy footage. Oh, my God. I was near death.
Yeah, we're on different pages tonight, buddy.
Very different pages tonight. This has been a challenge for me.
So we're now at the good nights. Carrie says good nights. The Blues Brothers are front and center. I noticed that even as Elwood Blues, Dan bails pretty quickly. So let's rate this show. The host, I thought Carrie Fisher was excellent. Up to this point, like, her TV and film performing career was somewhat limited. She had a hurdle to overcome without being seen as Princess Leia the whole night. And I thought she did a great job. She was a mix at times. She was the funny one in the sketch. She was the straight one in the sketch. And even in that Mercy Killer, she was just a supporting player. I thought as a host, she was excellent. I really was pleased.
I feel like they should have used her a bit more, to be honest. I think if she would have been in Mercy Killers, I think they should have leaned into her not straight man type chops, because she's actually, you know, she's quite funny. But at the same time, she did a good job. She did the best of what she had there. And I was pretty happy with her as the host. Again, could have done without the Princess Leia bits. But at the same time, you know, that's what she's known for at the time. That's the audience they're trying to bring into the show. So it's understandable. But yeah, outside of that, pretty good.
I think I agree with Kevin. I found there was kind of an underutilization of her when she seemed comfortable and fine with everything she was in. It's impossible to say what's going on in writers' rooms, of course, but I didn't find that she was around or as prominent as she should have been, but when she was there, she was fine.
The music, it's a little different when we're looking at the Blues Brothers. These guys are cast members, and the show is sort of doing what it can to promote what they're up to, much to maybe their future detriment. That being said, I really think Dan and John are good at what they did here. And what they're lacking in traditional musicianship, if they are lacking, is made up for with their energy, their showmanship, and an excellent backing band. They do a fantastic job getting the audience up and excited. And I just thought this was a really strong performance, actually better than their Steve Martin performances last year.
It's just not for me. I liked the energy, and I don't, you know, music is so subjective. So it would be foolish for me to describe in any detail why it's not for me. Especially on this platform, suffice it to say, it is not. But I liked the electricity at the very least.
I thought they did excellent. Although a lot of that has to do with the actual band that's working with them at the same time. I think the band should have got a bit more recognition for the musical numbers than just the Blues Brothers. Not saying that they didn't do a bad job. They did a great job. But the only reason they did such a good job was just how on task the band was with like filling in the energy for them to work off of. But otherwise, yeah, I really enjoyed the music.
So what was the worst sketch of the night?
Oh, my worst sketch of the night? You said worst sketch of the night, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, 50s beach space trip, whatever the hell that was. It went on forever. I thought they were hacky Star Wars jokes. Old Frankie and Annette jokes. Come on. It's 1978. I know you want to make some Star Wars jokes, but going to the 50s beach party? Get it together. Put Princess Leia in a punk club. Send her to see the Sex Pistols. Do something cool. Not cool. Not cool.
I'm going to agree with Matt. I didn't hate the sketch. It's a really long sketch. But in comparison to all the other stuff that was done tonight, it's obviously the weakest of the bunch, in my opinion. But yeah, I would say it's the Beach Blanket Bimbo from Outer Space. I believe that's the title of the sketch.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Just a lot going on. It's a little cringy at parts. There are jokes there, but they kind of get lost in all the other minutia of the whole sketch. It's not great.
Well, it's obvious tonight that I really enjoyed tonight's show, and I had a really hard time picking my least favorite and my favorite too, because I'm getting away from putting the Mr. Bills and the short films in here, and I'm trying to keep it just to the sketches. Problem is, for me, every sketch tonight was pretty strong, so I actually went with the Chinese ballet as my least favorite tonight, which might be a shocker because I know we all enjoyed it, but I liked everything else a little bit more, I think. What was your best sketch of the night, guys?
I thought the Loud family was pretty clever. I thought it was a silly joke that they really kept afloat for a long time. Everybody was really funny in it. Gilda was killing it. And yeah, Dan speaking normally. When somebody just speaking normally gets a good laugh out of me, you've done it right.
It's hard for me because outside of the Beach Blanket Bimbo Outer Space bleh, sketch, I thought all the other sketches were pretty strong. I'm going with Mercy Killers simply because I really enjoyed that sketch like a lot more than I care to mention. It would have been nice if Carrie had a bit of a bigger part in there. But again, it's just the title card and then the little theme song at the end of it and all the other little stupid jokes. It's such a ridiculous premise. And I absolutely loved it.
I was torn, but I went with Beach Blanket Bimbo from Outer Space. Completely different reasons as why you hated it. I think actually the reason you guys hated it, part of the reason I liked it, there were some tech glitches. But beyond that, I mean, this was a perfect parody of these old stupid movies. And yeah, they're getting their shots in at Frankie and Annette, but this whole thing was hilarious to me. Catchy. I found it catchy. Matt, you found it annoying song in there. Two of them, actually. And just, I mean, I laugh at like Vincent Price and Chubby Checker just randomly showing up. Alan Zweibel's Surfs Up cracked me up. I know these movies so well and hate them so much that this worked for me. You know, maybe shame on me for picking the overly goofy one, but I adored it. I thought it was great. Who was your star of the night, fellas?
I give my star of the night to Dan Aykroyd, even though I don't love his Vincent Price impression. His performance in Tomorrow was great. I thought he was good in the Paris mutual funds brothel house, whatever the hell it was, toward at the end. And he really brought it as his dancing is my favorite part of the Blues Brothers when he's kicking out those long legs and going crazy. I noticed him every time he was on tonight. So Dan for me.
Yeah, it's going to be Dan for me as well. He wore a lot of different hats in this episode. Really played to a lot of his strengths through the entire episode. Like even the lowest part of a sketch, he was not a part of the lowest part. He was the part that made it a little bit more enjoyable. Even the beach, as weird and pervy as his Vincent Price was to me, I still got a chuckle from him. So, yeah, I would say Dan Aykroyd is my top of the night.
Yeah, I also went with Dan. We have a sweep here for Dan Aykroyd. I think based on what they did, the choices tonight had to be Dan or John. But then when we look at all the stuff, Dan was in almost every segment. He even voiced Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know. He didn't do updates, but beyond that, he was everywhere. Obi-Wan, Vincent Price, soft-spoken Rick in the Loud family, Tom Snyder, the mutual fund pimp and in the World Bar. Yeah, this was Dan Aykroyd's night, no question about it. So overall, there was a joke last week on the show, and Matt alluded to it, that the Buck Henry episode, they just coasted because they already started working on this episode. And I kind of believe that. I thought this was well written, well performed, high energy. Everyone had something to do. Lorraine might have gotten the shaft a little bit on this one. But for everyone else, this was excellent ensemble comedy. They had to address Star Wars, so they did it at the top and they got it out of the way and then they moved on. everyone I thought was great throughout. Fisher was right on. The music was great. Audience was in on it. And they really didn't rely too hard on the recurring characters. I think we only got to see Roseanne, Rosanna Dana, and Leonard Pinth-Garnell. You know, Bimbo, like it or not, was probably one of their most ambitious sketches to date. And Loud Family, which was hilarious, was laughably simple, and they had everything in between. And the worst sketch for me, being the Chinese ballet, was still a really strong sketch, and we had a good chiller reel in there. I really enjoyed this episode. I actually gave this an 8.5 out of 10.
For me, I would say this is a solid 7. Just 7. For me, it didn't have too many lows. It had a decent amount of highs. But again, the beach blanket Bimbo for Outer Space. It's just, it's a long sketch. It's a long title. It just, it bothers me. But outside of that, the rest of the show is fantastic. I just feel like they could have, if they utilized Carrie a little bit differently, I think I would have given it a higher rating. But everything else, from the music to a lot of the performances, was fantastic.
Setting aside the music, because it's just not my thing, but I mean, I didn't enjoy it, and that's my rating. I found this show a real train wreck, with really poor attention to detail and some really good concepts like the Mercy Killers that really just didn't play out the way it was supposed to. An underutilization of the host, an underutilization of Lorraine, and I barely saw Jane. And sometimes I'm like, what the hell am I watching here? Yeah, I was pretty disappointed throughout. I didn't think it was particularly sharp. Weekend Update, I thought, was a dud. And I thought this was a slog to sit through. I give this a 4.
It's quite a range between Matt and I. Kevin, you're kind of right in the middle there. So with my 8.5, Matt's 4, Kevin's 7, we wind up with a 6.5. Over at the IMDb, they went with a straight 8, which is exactly our exchange rate of 1.5 in the difference. It's funny how that keeps popping up, Matt. That's a day one thing that we noticed.
Yeah, it's good to keep track of, I think. At least I think. Yeah.
As far as the IMDb is concerned, this is the best episode of the year. Ranked number 1 out of 20 already. Our cumulative scores and our individual scores disagree with that. And all things considered, we still gave it a half-decent score. So yeah, not a bad, a good one for me, not a bad one from Kevin, and a train wreck from Matt. That's the Carrie Fisher episode. We don't get to see Carrie again on the show, unfortunately. They could have used her, I'm sure, later. So Kevin, thank you so much for joining us tonight for the Carrie Fisher episode. It was a lot of fun, and we're going to have you back again this season.
Always glad to be here, and I'm actually glad that I got to enjoy the music this time. So
yeah.
Have me back anytime.
Matt, do you know who our next host is going to be?
Walter Matthau, did I hear?
It is Walter Matthau. Do you know the musical guest?
No, please tell.
Hold on to your hats for this one. Garrett Morris.
Whoa, that's cool. I'm down.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Walter Matthau, a big fan of classical and opera, wanted Garrett as his musical guest. So it gets a point already, even though Jane has said that Walter Matthau was her least favorite host.
Ooh, I'm curious now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll be back in about a week, but until then, we'll be selling mutual funds in the seediest bars of France here in Essex.